Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
And all you maggots out there, listen up!
Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is
Triple Threat Fest.
Presenting to you on my right,
Marquis Davis.
Promoted by
Boner Wood.
Supervised by the
Jekyll.
You wanna wrestle me?
We want to say hi to fans throughout. My name is Bean Gene Okerlund.
You're in for a treat.
I must ask you now.
Do you smell what the Rock is doing?
Damn! It's Vader time!
I just want to make everybody happy.
Viva mi raza!
I didn't just make headlines last night. I turned the universe upside down.
Oh, you didn't know?
Quit.
Have a nice day.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold sets up. You maggots are all dismissed.
Oh, can y'all feel it? This is Triple Threat Vets here on DVRadio.net. Yes, we are talking wrestling with me, Marquis Davis, Boner Wood, and Jekyll. Yes, Triple Threat Fest. Let me give you a quick breakdown of what this show is about. It is about wrestling, past, present, and future. Wrestling. Yes, we are veterans and we love wrestling, so we are going to talk wrestling here on Triple Threat Vet on DVRadio.net. WDVR. Bonerwood, are you there?
I am, but it's vets, plural, not singular.
Whatever.
Yes, I'm here, brother.
Oh, man. Jekyll, you there?
Oh, of course I am.
So, since I just gave you a quick breakdown of what the show was going to be about, because it's, we veterans and we watch wrestling. Bo, tell us what your view of this show is going to be.
As you said at the beginning, we're vets. We love wrestling. Most of us grew up on wrestling. Whoever you are, if you're an older vet up in your 200s, or if you're a younger vet in your younger twos and threes, then you know what wrestling is, and you're probably watching it. That being said, it's going to be a half an hour to an hour segment or show, I should say, once a month. And hopefully you guys will give us some input and let us know what you want to hear.
You know what's funny about this show is that I used to wrestle when I was 18, 19, here in North Georgia. Yes, I did. My name was Center of Attention. I was a heel, a bad guy for anyone who's listening and does not know what a heel is. I was a bad guy, Center of Attention. You couldn't tell me anything. My finishing move was the best finishing move. My maneuver was the best maneuver. I was the center of attention. Jekyll, you got anything?
I'm just trying to figure out what changed.
What you mean?
Because you're still the center of attention.
But I'm not a bad guy anymore. You know, I'm a good guy.
You got to have that flip every once in a while.
Sometime. So let's talk some wrestling here, okay, people? This is what the show is about. We're going to talk some wrestling. Let's go with, let's ask this. Your favorite wrestlers of all time. Let's go with that. Mine just so happens to be Sting. Yes, Stinger himself. I like the face color paint Sting. I like the crow Sting. I like that new red and black Sting. I love Sting. Steve Borden, my favorite wrestler.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Marquis. Sting, I mean, I'm a fanboy of Sting. I can't tell you how many times that every time I've seen him, I wanted to pass out, have a heart attack. You know, I just wanted to fall over. I've told you guys, you know, offline that if I ever met the man, that I would probably pass out. I would break down and cry. I'd start hyperventilating. But yes, as you said, Mr. Steve Borden, Sting himself, who unfortunately quit wrestling, who can wrestle. But I am happy to say he joined the WWE Hall of Fame a couple years back, which honestly, for those who don't know, is a huge, huge honor for any wrestler in the business, whether they're living or they passed away. It is a great and huge honor. Jekyll, what about yours, brother?
See, I got to go a little bit different. I got to go with the man himself, Jake Roberts.
Oh, Jake the Snake.
Oh, the Snake. Yeah.
The thing is, you know, it goes back to the days when it was all about the character.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm telling you, when you look back at the 80s and early 90s and he's in the ring, he owned that ring. End of story. You know, there wasn't an eyeball that was looking away when he was in the ring. You know,
who did the Snake bite?
Oh, Randy Savage.
Yeah, Randy Savage. That's
didn't he get in the ring? Didn't he get Ricky Steamboat one time?
Or might have.
Or was Ricky on the mat scared to death and thought he was about to bite him? Because I know at one point I watched an interview where Jake and Ricky were wrestling, and Ricky's in the middle of the ring, and he goes and gets out his snake and comes back, and Ricky keeps his eyes closed the entire time. I can't remember the outcome of what happened, but I know he was so afraid of that snake.
But let's go back to what Jekyll was saying about the character. It's like right now when you watch wrestling, some of the characters have died down. Back in the 80s and the 90s, the characters were larger than life. They were flamboyant characters. You know, you take Jimmy Superfly Snuka. He was a larger-than-life character. You know, it was just a character show that was driven by good and evil. Nowadays, it's kind of iffy.
Well, to touch on that, Marquis, you know, a lot of that comes from the lucha-style wrestling. We're down in Mexico. Lucha Libre wrestling is all about the wrestler. They've actually got comic books as the wrestlers. They are superheroes. They are the hero. They are the main stage. Today, for example, they still have Lucha Libre going on, and it's happening happening more and more. It's coming back, and it's a style of wrestling, and it's not just a style of wrestling. It's their way of life, and they hold that mask so dear that they will not take it off, and if they do, it's a shame upon them and their families, and they take that as a symbolic resemblance to that hero for the crowd.
Remember when WCW had the luchadors come out, Psicosis, Juventud Guerrera, they had Chavo Guerrero was a luchador, they had who's the other one? La Parca.
Oh yeah. Big one. Who was that, Jekyll?
Rey Mysterio.
Oh yes. Yeah. One of the most well known, especially today.
Lucha wrestling is really exciting though. You know what's his name? Alberto Guerrero.
Yes.
Alberto, what is his name?
Alberto Del Rio.
That's his name, Alberto Del Rio. His family is a long line of luchadors.
Yes, yes.
It's actually a funny story with him, too. He got into a fight with a wrestler down in Mexico, and they stabbed him.
Oh, that's right. About that.
It's Alberto El Patron.
Oh, now. That's right. That's what it is now. He changed that. I forgot about that.
He moved over to TNA, so he had to change over to a different name.
Talking about the lucha style of wrestling, there's been a lot of wrestlers that came up in the 90s that are still wrestling today or they're slowing down. People like Chris Jericho. We've talked offline about a number of them. Dean Malenko, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero. All those guys actually stem from Lucha Libre wrestling because they love the style. They had to work those gigs, and they got people to take them under their wings and show them this huge grappling and flying style that was so over the top that captivated the audience and turned wrestling into what a lot of us that remember it from the 70s and 80s grew up through.
Well, I would say that cruiserweight style is more 90s-ish. Like, if you think about the 70s and 80s, you had big lumbering guys, you know, like Paul Bunyan and Big John Studd and, you know, Earthquake and those kind of guys lumbering around, just throwing their bodies around and, you know, slobbering over the place. And then you had the 90s come along. You had that Lucha Libre style, cruiserweight style, if you want to go to WCW's days, when Chris Jericho was a cruiserweight champion and Dean Malenko was the cruiserweight champion. You know, and now in the WWE, they have the cruiserweight division, which I'm just reading that Neville is apparently about to leave WWE, and he's like their biggest cruiserweight star right now.
Marquis, if you don't mind, before we go into that, into the present, I'm actually looking at WhatCulture.com at their 10 best Lucha Libre wrestlers of all time. Mm-hmm. You mentioned in the 70s and 80s, it was big grappling guys. Number four, Carlife LaGuardia. This guy was started his career in 1950. When you look at him, he's a pretty big guy. He's got one on the right where he started out pretty small, but on the left picture, he looks like he's a pretty big built man. I mean, he doesn't look like your normal Lucha Libre guy. And I'm not talking about, you know, Lucha Libre isn't all about high flying. It's more of that fast paced, get them now kind of style.
Yeah, but what Marquis said was right. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, the big federations in the 70s and 80s, you know, you're talking about guys like Yokozuna, you know, Big John Studd, all those guys that were 300 plus pounds, you know, they weren't flying around the ring. You know, some of them, it was all big impact, making you go, oh, man, you know, did somebody just break their neck or nose or face or whatever else?
Most definitely. Yeah. I 100% agree with that completely. Yes.
The mid 90s, when that started changing, you know, that was one of the best things that they did, you know, get into that more high pro or high flying, fast paced action, you know, brought some of the best stuff that you've ever seen.
Oh, really? You're right. You hit the nail on the head right there. I actually threw us off topic. Marquis, you want to talk about Neville a little bit?
Yeah, okay, so Neville, if you guys don't know or aren't following the current WWE, you know, culture or wrestling scene, Neville is a high-flying luchador. He does some of the most amazing, crazy moves I've ever seen in the ring. He does this 540 splash, what is it, his finishing maneuver?
That arrow.
It's crazy. If you haven't seen it, YouTube it. Neville is a flipping beast. I mean, he flips a lot. But it is reported that he is not, he's thinking about walking out of the WWE. It's rumored right now. They really don't know why, but they think that he wants to leave. And I would assume because he's not getting the push that he really thought he was after leaving NXT.
I'm reading a forum right now that was updated yesterday, I believe. What is a 205? Because it says, from his perspective, he's held 205 for a while, done well, got kudos for his personal improvement, and being one of the better things WD is putting out. Apparently he's
205 is what used to be the cruiserweight division.
Got you. It's the show. Okay, I got you.
It's 205 live. So right now, the cruiserweights are on Monday night, and then they also have their own show that's on Tuesday nights on WWE Network after SmackDown.
Right. Okay. I got you now. That makes complete sense because I'm reading and that, you know, I don't get into these forums like I once did. And I just see 205 and I'm like, what the heck is that? But okay, that makes sense. But apparently he's asked for a release. Is that what you're reading, Marquis?
Yeah, that's what I'm reading. He's asked for a release. But if you think about it, back in NXT, he was the babe, the boy, the everything, you know, in NXT. When he came to WWE, he put the WWE on notice because of his high-flying, quick maneuvers, his fast-paced grappling style, his finishing maneuver, but they haven't pushed him to any title other than the Cruiserweight title. I mean, how would that make you feel if you came from being the number one guy in the company at NXT to being absolutely nothing, where you have guys like Kevin Owens, who's now been champion. You have Roman Reigns, who came from NXT as well, being champion. All these guys from NXT have been champion except Neville. And Neville has the wrestling capability and the ability to hold the championship. I mean, he might not be the biggest guy, but he can wrestle.
Okay. Well, that goes back to what we were talking about offline, too. You know, he is a smaller guy. That's the biggest problem.
Okay,
I'm sorry, Jekyll. Small can be the heavyweight champion.
I'm sorry, I kept interrupting you there, Jekyll. But I just found on Reddit that someone has a copy of an article with the news in bold. It says, terrible write-up clearly published without proofreading. It says, according, it's and the baseless speculation cross out. So I'm going to read you the full article, and there's stuff crossed out, but it says, according to a report from Fightful's Sean Raw Sapp, Neville left Raw very angry. At this point, it's hard to gauge whether he was angry with being scheduled losing to Amore, or if another issue was on his mind. Also, according to Sean, WWE officials did try to reason with Neville, sought things out. However, Neville was not willing to play ball. apparently...
That's another thing, though. Enzo Amore, he has a great mic presence, but he's not that great of a wrestler, so I would be upset if I had to lose to him as well.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I love how he can work a mic, how he can just shoot from the hip, and he's got some quick whips. He has a wrestling style that's good, but for the people that he's been wrestling lately, he can't do it. He can't hold up his own, and it's just not there.
I just find it funny how, you know, if you don't have the complete package in wrestling, you know, we was talking about Chris Benoit offline, you know, Chris Benoit couldn't talk, but he wowed you with his wrestling, you know, so he became champion. All right, Neville can't really talk, you know, he's not that great on the mic, but he wows you with his wrestling. Why won't they give him a chance? You know, Chris Benoit wasn't the biggest guy. He was a cruiserweight as well in WCW. You know?
Right. You know, I've heard a lot of wrestlers talk after they've left WWE, left TNA, a big part of them when they left WCW. And what I've heard mainly from WWE former wrestlers is that Vince will release them if they don't show progress. And I'm like, so you hold them back, but if they don't want to take the initiative and build on their character and you don't approve something that they said will get the crowd wow and it's their fault. I mean, they were going to let Cesaro go because he didn't build on his character, and yet he had brought them like 50 or 60 different outlines throughout his, what was it, 8 month, first coming and upbringing at WWE. And, you know, the whole career, the storyline editors turned him down and said, you're not going to do that. It's not who your character is. So, I mean, you're holding them back, but you expect more from them. I don't understand that.
You know, if you're just tuning in, this is Triple Threat Vets here on DVRadio.net, WDVR, with me, Marquis Davis, Boner Wood, and Jekyll. We are talking wrestling, okay? And along with what you just said, Bo, about the progression of characters, many times these characters aren't developed in the background. Like, look at Stone Cold Steve Austin. When he came with the 316 angle after beating your favorite wrestler there, Mr. Jekyll, at, In Your House? No, King of the Ring. King of the Ring. He beat him in King of the Ring and came with the Austin 316. That was, like, off the cuff.
Yeah, so let's take a listen to what was actually said during the 96 King of the Ring with Steve Austin in the beginning of Austin 316.
Don't just get him out of the ring, get him out of the WWF, because I've proved, son, without a shadow of a doubt, you ain't got what it takes anymore. You sit there and you thump your Bible and you say your prayers, and it didn't get you anywhere. Talk about your Psalms, talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says, I just whipped your ass.
You see, that's what I'm talking about. Off the cuff. You know, Jake Roberts had just, you know, converted or found Jesus or whatever he did. And Steve Austin used that against him in this promo. And that's what made him such a superstar at this time. I mean, it just went ham, and people hated him for it. People loved him for it. It was just all over the place. But Steve Austin became the face of the WWF at the time. During that time.
Yeah, thank you, World Wildlife Foundation, for that. But what you said about people loving him and hating him, I was in school at the time, and I had a teacher, a science teacher at that, that was a big, big Christian, and he had started preaching at the time, and he asked us who our favorite wrestler was, and I said Steve Austin at the time, because that's what I was watching. I was watching WWF. I didn't get to see WCW. And when I said that, he turned white, and he said, I don't like him because he uses the Bible to push his quotes. And at the time, I'm a kid, and I'm like, no, that's not right. And even today, that's not what he was doing. But that's how people took that didn't like him, you know?
And it's funny, because people don't really understand that Steve Austin is a devout Christian. You know what I mean?
Oh, yes, wholeheartedly. He is a believer.
He knew the scripture. You know, and people do it to this day. We'll say a Bible verse, we'll put our name in front of it, and do like, you know, Davis 4:18. You know what I'm saying? It's just something off the cuff. There's nothing against the Bible, nothing against Christians. It was just something that he said off the cuff that became instantly sensational.
Well, if you think about it, it's sort of the veteran dark humor cut type of thing that he used there. He took John 3:16 and turned it into Austin 3:16 because he did mention Psalms. He did mention John. And he took, well, you know, I just whipped your hind end and Austin 3:16 plastered at the end. So, I mean, it like you said, it would be like us saying, I just blew up Osama bin Laden. Here's USA 498 or whatever, you know.
Yeah. but that's what creates superstars. And like you were saying about, you know, people taking ideas to Vince McMahon, sometimes you just have to be quick witted. And a lot of these newer superstars just don't have it because they've been babied the entire way up through the culture. No one expected that. Look at The Rock. The Rock was supposed to be a baby face, you know, goody two shoes kind of character. And then he just flipped the script and became this freaking a genius on the mic and became an instant superstar. Sometimes these stars in the WWE need to take initiative.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I get that, but like I said, I've heard so many times that Vince has turned down such great proposals. He's turned down Undertaker of all people with some of his proposals, and then some of the people they've let go that have went on to shine in places like TNA or Lucha Underground, which is on El Rey TV. If you can get that channel, it's an awesome 1 hour show that actually happens on a Wednesday, and they have like seasonal episodes. But it just astonishes me that so many people within the wrestling community has this great potential, want to build on it, but the people they have to go through turns them down and expects
more
of them.
Let's be real here. When The Undertaker became Biker Undertaker, how many people loved that?
I mean, I loved it. I know tons of people around me loved it.
It was BS! That's what it was!
Well, it depends on your perspective, because at the time, and especially having remembered, you know, all the way back to when he first showed up, you know, the original Dead Man Didn't Talk had, you know, Brother Love, followed by
Paul Bearer.
He had somebody else in there too. I can't remember. You know, for him as a character, that was a natural progression. And if you remember, that had started like a year, or actually 3 or 4 years prior to that. He had that angle with Kane, and they kept showing him behind the scenes, you know, and he was in his, you know, leathers. He was in his biker gear because he is a biker, and people reacted to it. And actually, I personally think that was one of his best characters. You know, even though for him, as far as, you know, and especially being a vet, and here's a big thing, the fact that, you know, WrestleMania, when he came down with the flag on the back of his bike, because his brother was in Iraq at the time, you know, it was real, yeah. You know, it wasn't the Undertaker, you know, undead king of the darkness type thing. You know, it was a real character, but I know a lot of people hated it.
Right. You know, like you're saying, Taker resonated with actual people.
I'm going to tell you a quick story. When I learned how to wrestle, I learned in the garage. My trainer, his name is Awesome TC. You can Google him. He's actually on Facebook. He still wrestles to this day. Awesome TC, he freaking taught me how to take bumps. That's falling on a mat, on a mattress, an old dirty mattress in his garage. And take it how you want it, you know, old dirty mattress in the garage. I know you vets. Ha, ha, ha. Marky was laying on an old dirty mattress. I get it. Whatever. I did it, all right? I used to do back bumps, front bump, back bump, front bump. He taught me how to kick on a wall. He said, if you make my pictures fall in his house on my wall, you will be doing push-ups. So I learned how to kick and make it look realistic with my punches. Realistic. We used to run. I mean, wrestling is a hard sport. I mean, it takes a toll on your body. I'll tell you a quick story, another quick story, okay? Another quick story from the wrestler, COA. Oh, hello, everybody. I was doing a show. We was doing a wrestling show in a flea market, and my back gave out so bad, I literally screamed like a little girl when he threw me on the mat. I screamed. I mean, I hollered. And he was like, you got to finish the match. I said, I can't even get up. So he got mad at me and started hitting me for real. And that pumped adrenaline in my body, so I was able to finish the match. That is what real wrestling is, and a lot of these new guys don't go through that. It's just sad to say it, but they don't. And with that being said, you are listening to Triple Threat Vets here on DVRadio.net, WDVR, with me, Marky Davis, Jekyll, and Boner Wood.
You're listening to WDVR on DVRadio.net.
DV Radio. And now an announcement from PTS Doc regarding an issue and call to action from our veteran brothers and sisters and those helping to take care of them that's going to affect many of our brothers and sisters.
PTS Dog here. I'd like to talk to you about the PAWS Act, H.R. 2327, currently before the Veterans Affairs Committee. Although I applaud the effort, the PAWS Act is severely limited. Instead of singling out a non-U.S. entity, Assistance Dogs International, as the sole accrediting body for nonprofits applying for PAWS Act grants, I propose these grants be funded based on the performance of the training organizations applying, not their affiliation. Please visit PTS Dog on Facebook and read the pinned post. Sign my petition and make your voice heard in Congress. Let's get the VA to recognize that PTSD service dogs save veteran lives.
DV Radio.
Ever shop online at smile.amazon.com? Why not give back to the DV Farm by making it your charity of choice? No extra fees or hidden costs, and a portion of your purchase goes directly towards the DV Farm, located in Gilsum, New Hampshire, and helping to continue its mission. That's smile.amazon.com, and be sure DV Farm is your charity of choice. For more information about the DV Farm, please go to dvfarm.org.
All right, and welcome back to Triple Threat Vets with myself, Jekyll, Marquise, and of course, Bonerwood. Another topic to bring up in most recent news, you know, we got the reformation of the Shield, just happened this past week. Great time to be watching again, because now we got, you know, the old school factions coming back into play. And as we were talking during the break, you know, Bo mentioned some of the old ones that were out there. You know, what are some of the ones that you guys remember the most from back in the day?
Oh, one of the most famous that comes to mind is Legion of the Doom, man. Hawk and Animal. I mean, they've had every tag team title in every wrestling territory and federation that has been known. I mean, they've held them. So, I mean, hands down, even though, you know, people like the Hardy Boys and the Freebirds, I've got to say Legion of Doom is my all-time favorite.
Oh, the Legion of Doom. Oh, what you gonna do, brother? I'm more inclined to talk about the Four Horsemen. I love them to death. Ric Flair, who are we gonna go with? Which Four Horsemen are we gonna go with? Ric Flair, Arn Anderson are the two core members. Then you had, you know, Chris Jericho was there, and then you had Sting was a fake member for a minute, and they'd jump him. Then you would have, who else was in the Four Horsemen, man? That was such a great stable, because they were a mainstay for a lot of the old wrestling faction, well, not factions, territories, you know, back in the day, because that's what it was. It was wrestling territories. You had the South territory, you had the North, you had the West, you had the Midwest, you know, you had Florida, you had Georgia, had their own territories, and the Four Horsemen dominated all of those territories back in the day.
Well, you asked who they were. It was Flair, Arn Anderson, Ole Anderson, and Tully Blanchard, and the Andersons were not brothers, as many people believe.
Tully Blanchard, his finish move was a slingshot suplex. I used to love Tully Blanchard. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Real quick, before Jekyll tells us his favorite, you know, you mentioned Sting. There was Luger, Lex Luger, Barry Windham, Sid Vicious. Then there was the Three Horsemen. And then the reformation when the NWO came around. And then the final incarnation, which was around 98, 99. And then their legacy, which was Team Package, the Extreme Horsemen, Evolution, Fortune, and then the Four Horsewomen, which is the current, we want to say Horsemen, but that's what they are today, is the Four Horsewomen.
But people don't, you don't remember when Sting would try to be in the Four Horsemen and Ric Flair would bring him in and be like, yeah, here you go, Sting, and they would just jump him and just beat him up, and then next week he'd do the same thing again. I used to, oh man, I love old wrestling.
Yes.
All right, Jekyll, what's your favorite stable, Jekyll?
I got to go with LOD as well, you know, back in the day. And, you know, one of the things about them, especially way back then, was Paul Ellering. You know, he was another one of those guys that, you hung on every word, you know. It was one of those things. I mean, you listen to him, and you know, when he would talk, you were just like, man, somebody's gonna get messed up here in a minute.
I remember
it always happened.
Sorry, Jeff. I remember when I was a kid, I'd always hear Hulk go, "What a rush, man!" What a rush. That right there, I would jump up and I would start like jumping up and down. That was my favorite entrance of all time. I loved it.
But okay. if we're gonna talk stables, why have we not mentioned the NWO yet?
Well, I did mention them, and I was hoping one of you would bring us into that.
You know, I almost said, because I'll definitely say a secondary one for me has to be the Outsiders that led into the NWO, because it was such a monumental angle at the time. You know, being a fan of both shows back then, and, you know, trying to watch both of them on Monday nights, and you never knew which one was going to do what. You know, the fact that you saw, you know, Diesel and Razor Ramon suddenly show up with no gear on, and you're like, holy shit, these guys are regular people. And, you know, it just, it changed the way wrestling was ever since then.
I especially loved the realism when they sat down in the rafters with the crowd, and they're just sitting there, and everybody's like, what is Nash and Hall doing here? I was even like, oh my God, what are they doing there? They're not wrestling. And they didn't. They didn't even speak for the longest of time. They never said one word to the camera, on mic. It was that shock and awe suspense that kept us wanting to know what was going to happen next. Because they'd done that, and then they would stop, and another week would go by. You wouldn't see them, and then all of a sudden, here's Hall and Nash again.
But the thing with them is that they were big names to begin with. You know, a stable that people had to grow to learn to love was Raven's Flock in WCW.
I have to say that was one Raven, of the coolest ones ever. Raven was a man.
Raven was such a great wrestler. I mean, he really was. And I don't know what happened to him, man.
Well, he was another one of those too, you know, and I keep going back to this. He had that ability when he got in the ring, especially when he really brought out that Raven character versus Johnny Polo and, you know, what was the other one? Johnny Flamingo, you know, all those characters that he did. You know, it was that dark, you know, he had that presence, like, you know, bringing all those guys in. And a lot of those wrestlers that he brought in with the Flock were great wrestlers too.
Billy Kidman was a great wrestler.
What I loved about Raven was he didn't always have to speak on the mic, but when he spoke on the mic, it meant something, and he could work that crowd like there was no tomorrow. But if he didn't speak on the mic, just him sitting in that turnbuckle before the match started, you knew it was going to go down, and you knew he meant business each and every time.
You know what? I was just reading something, and, you know, I'm thinking about stables and going back to Ric Flair. I was thinking about Ric Flair, some of his greatest feuds, you know, and the one that really, like, made everything for me when I used to watch Ric Flair wrestling back in the day was him versus, Dusty Rhodes, you know, oh my God, they had some great matches back in the Starrcade in 1995 and 84. I used to watch them on tape. My grandma was a huge wrestling fan, so she would record all of the pay-per-views and all of the old wrestling shows, and she would watch them back, so... You know, I was born in 86. Yeah, I'm a young buck. I know. I'm sorry, people. But, like, when I turned 6, she would sit me down, and we would watch these old 84, 85 videos. And I grew to love the Ric Flair character and the Four Horsemen stable, because they would always just gang up on somebody. It was like a tight group of buddies who just, you didn't mess with them, you know?
I hate to change subject, but really quick, we're talking wrestling. It's a Wednesday night. I'm watching an all-new Lucha Underground, and they're women. It's a sexy star, and I believe her name's Taya. And you don't see it happen in WWE. You certainly didn't see it back in the Attitude Era or on WCW. But these women are wrestlers. They know how to fight. One of them is literally bleeding, like she is profusely bleeding. It's all in her hair. It's all over her face. I mean, today's wrestling isn't what it used to be, but Lucha Underground, I'm telling you guys, you've got to check it out.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. That actually reminds me of,
you know, one of the, well, I got to point this out. Ric Flair's greatest rivalry was always his face plant into the mat. I'm sorry. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. If you're a pro wrestling fan, you know that look.
Oh, yeah.
He would hit the turnbuckle, turn around and start punching the air and then just stop and just fall. Oh, my goodness.
He looked drunk as all be it, but it was one of the funniest things. And even when he was one of his last wrestling debuts, he done it. And I just absolutely died laughing.
Now, Marquis, I got to ask you, and I know whenever we're on the air, this is going to come up. You said your grandmother was the one that really got you into it. Do you remember? Because my mom was big into it, and I would die laughing as a kid when all of a sudden my mom and my grandmother would be watching wrestling with us, and they'd start yelling and jumping up and down because you know, was the good guy or the bad guy was doing something they weren't supposed to, and like you're dying because you're like, why are these people jumping up and laughing at the TV?
They've been in the background. My grandma will be in the background. He got the chair. He totally got the chair, Rick. Totally got the chair.
So we started this subject on the Shield reforming. What do you guys think about that? Is it a good move for WWE? Is it a good move for Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, and Roman Reigns? I mean, how do you two feel about that?
I guess I'll go first. They've all been champion, right? All three of them. I think it's a good move if you want to try to keep them in the limelight, have them do old Shield stuff. But I think it would be an even better move if they make Roman Reigns a heel against those three. But I'm going to hold that for later. Go ahead, Jekyll. What you think about it?
You know, I think it's one of those things that the fans have been clamoring for it for a little bit. You know, they put Dean and Seth back together as a tag team for a little bit. And, of course, Roman's been out there. You know, as long as they're listening to the fans, and I think bringing back that no-nonsense, you know, ass-kicking type of faction that they're portrayed as is a good thing. You know, from what I saw on Monday, you know, they brought them back and they did exactly what they used to do. You know, they came out, beat people up, and then they left. You know, it's the only thing that I can equate it to was back in the day with Goldberg. You know, he didn't come out to get paid by the minute. You know, he went out there, kicked ass, and left. You know, that's what these guys do. They're not goofball characters like they were making them out to be. And I think it's a great thing, but I agree, Marquise. They need to turn him heel at some point.
Yep. See, Goldberg's a whole nother show.
Exactly. I was about to say we'll hit that topic another night. But I'm sort of in the middle. I feel like Jekyll. I think it's a good move. They did listen to their fan base. But at the same time, I'm partial with Marquis as well. But I'm sort of in the middle with both of them because I feel like it was sort of a move out of desperation. Because, I mean, they've got all this potential that they could do with a storyline for all three of them and with everything that they've been doing. And then they turn and do this. I'm like, are you really listening to the fan base? Are you doing it because you know it's going to bring more ratings? What's the final edge there? But
well, I'm gonna tell you the truth, man. I'm not a big Dean Ambrose fan. I call him Sloppy Dean. His wrestling style is so sloppy and just dirty, nasty to me. I hate it. You know. So
now, Marquis, just so the people listening understand, are you talking about his actual wrestling when he does a grapple or he throws someone into the ring, or are you talking about just his style? It's too lax. It's dirty. I'm going to get a cheap shot in wherever. Like,
no,
for
I'm
example,
talking about
Ric Flair.
Wrestling, period. Like his grappling, his punches are sloppy. His moves are always foretold 5 steps ahead of time. When he does that little stupid clothesline when he goes through the ropes and comes out, you see that coming from a mile away. His finishing maneuver is sloppily done. Everything Dean Ambrose does is sloppy. He's not. I remember I was comparing him to Terry Funk the other day because I was like, you know, he kind of reminds me of Terry Funk, but Terry Funk could click on that technical wrestling aspect of Bret Hart, Owen Hart, Dean Malenko in a heartbeat. Terry Funk could put it out of you. You know what I'm saying? But Dean Ambrose cannot bring you out and do that technical wrestling style that, you know, a lot of us wrestling purists enjoy.
I understand what you're saying, but I have heard a lot of interviews that have seen Dean back in his earlier days say he was a prime example of how wrestling should be. Some have even, quote, or I could quote, as saying that he was the next Jericho as far as wrestling critiques because he was that good. And I'm wondering if it's just how he wants to be portrayed right now.
It is. I've seen some of his older stuff, and he does have the technical capabilities, but they're making him out to be that lovable goofball. So he's got to have that clunky style where, yeah, you know, every move that he does, like anybody that paid attention, you know, he wouldn't hit anything.
Like, look at Mick Foley, okay? Mick Foley is not a technical wrestler, never has been, never will be, you know? And when he wrestles, you know that's not what he's going to give you. You know he's going to give you a straight brawl, you know? But he can still, he takes bumps, Mick Foley does, perfectly. Dean Ambrose takes bumps like a three-year-old child. It's just embarrassing at times when I watch him wrestling. I'm sorry, I just don't like it. I wish he would change it. If he could turn it off, please, Dean Ambrose. That's just me.
And that is your marquee rant right here on Triple Threat Bets.
And I think that's something you'll see, because if you remember with the Shield, he didn't do that. He was actually a much more technical wrestler when he was with them originally.
You're right. When he first started wrestling in WWE, the main shows, yes, he was really good. And then he became this sloppy monster. Now, I believe that it's going to affect him in the long run, because he might revert back to doing that when he does go back to doing the good technical type of wrestling. I don't know. I want to see it.
So we think Dean Ambrose is doing it as a show for his persona. Is that what we're saying? Are we all in agreement
on
that?
We can agree on that. Yeah,
okay.
We can agree.
So back to the Shield, what is the reason, Marquis, you think they should turn Roman Reigns heel?
Well, think about this, okay? Roman Reigns right now is perceived by the smarks, let's call them that, the smart marks. They know that he is bad. He has no mic skills, really. You know, he really doesn't. His wrestling is only up to par when he's with someone who's of higher caliber than he is in the ring. You know, he doesn't really put on a great performance when he wrestles someone, say, like, let's go with Neville. You know, if he wrestles Neville, he's not really doing that great, because Neville's a luchador-ish cruiserweight, where Dean Ambrose is a high-powered freak. But when he wrestles someone like AJ Styles, he puts on a great match because he has to, in order to not be outshunned. If they make him a heel and a bad guy, then he doesn't have to talk at all. Look at The Undertaker's first, 20 years in the WWE. He didn't talk. You don't need to talk to be a great superstar. Like we said with Chris Benoit. Doesn't have to talk, you know? Just put on a great match, and that's all he has to do. And if he's a heel, he can do it better than being a face.
You know, that's another thing with that, too. I mean, I think part of they need to turn him heel because the fans know that, you know, Vince has always been about the big muscular dudes, you know, the larger than life characters, which, let's face it, Roman is, you know, he's one of those big guys like that. You know, he's not going to be the super technical, like the smaller guys like Dean Malenko and, you know, those guys that really get that technical aspect to it. But the thing is, it was probably 4 or 5 months ago, right around the time of WrestleMania after he beat The Undertaker, like he showed he had the concept of being able to actually hold the crowd, because he walked out, didn't say a word, had them booing for 5 minutes every time he would put the mic up to his mouth, and he would just smirk and not say anything. So he has the skills to be that monster heel, to bring back, you know, Steve Austin when he first started, you know, The Rock when he got going, you know, then try to turn him face. But give him that heel run where people will get behind him as a bad guy.
You know what? That makes so much sense. Like, he has such a tweener personality to him now. A tweener, for people who don't know, is someone who's in between being a heel and a face. But it doesn't work for him because of his body type, his wrestling ability. It doesn't work. He needs to be either a heel or a face, not someone in between.
Yeah, most definitely. I've seen a few that have done that, and some can work it, some can play it. Sting, for example, he was always neutral. He could play the evil side, he could play the bad side, but when it came down to it, he was always for himself. It was always him and those that he held dear to him. Roman, I don't see that happening at all.
I think part of it just sucks because, I mean, they did such horrible, they gave him such bad material to work with for a while, you know, with that whole suffering succotash and all that other dumb shit that they gave him to say. You know, you can't build somebody up to be a good guy if you're giving them stupid lines that wouldn't have flown back in the 80s.
Also, I mean, they've built up this look of a bad boy, but I'm going to do good. Not really neutral, but he's the bad boy that's doing good, and that he can't pull that off with, as Jekyll said, the material he has to work with. It's just not going to fly.
What was the WrestleMania when The Rock came out there with him and they were booing him and The Rock looked confused because he's never been booed? He hasn't been booed in a long time. Oh, man. Well, it was like two WrestleManias ago.
No, that was the Royal Rumble, I think.
It was the Royal Rumble. The Rock came out with him. And he was holding his hand up, and they were booing. And The Rock was like, "What the hell is going on here? You don't boo when I'm in the ring."
Well, and that's the problem, is they've tried to manufacture these passing the torch moments with him. The first one was with The Rock, then with The Undertaker, the most recent one with John Cena. You know, everybody's lost to him, and the fans just aren't getting behind it. And they were on to something, because right after WrestleMania, you know, he came out with the whole, you know, it's my yard. And he went back to that, the early days of the Shield, when he didn't talk, you know, or he would be out there for 5 minutes, not say anything. And then, you know, it was believe that. And then he was done, you know, but he had that presence the entire time. Like, you know, somebody walks out there, they're going to catch a beating and that's going to be the end of it. That's what they need to bring back with him.
He's put on some really good matches. I mean, him and Brock Lesnar, that first time he had the championship match, you know, but Brock, that was a great match. I don't care what anyone said. That was a fantastic match. I mean, it had the highs and the lows of a good match, because Brock Lesnar just beat him down to the ground, to a pulp. And then he came back and Brock Lesnar beat him again. And that was a great match. He put on some great matches. He just doesn't have the character to back it up.
Yeah, Brock Lesnar is another full-on show that we'll bring to you right here on Triple Threat Vets. But I
like Brock Lesnar.
We've touched on Ambrose, we've touched on Reigns, but we've not touched on Seth Rollins, a man who was a good guy with the Shield, then he turned completely heel on everyone, and he went, as they called him back in the Attitude Era, corporate. How do you guys feel about his angle now, as it looks, he's a face right now. So what do you guys think about that?
They haven't been able to figure out what the hell to do with him. Because honestly, they brought him out and, you know, they tried to get him over with Triple H. You know, he got injured. And when they first brought him back after that injury, I think they really missed a chance to turn him face. You know, when the crowd was behind him and, you know, he basically just said, screw you to everybody. I think the Shield is probably the right way to go with him, and then, you know, figure out what the audience thinks of him after that. You know, what has he been going by? The Kingslayer just doesn't work, because let's face it, Triple H should not be on the show at all.
Whatever, definitely. Screw Seth Rollins. He injured Sting. I hate him.
Yeah, I'm right there with Marquis.
Don't disagree with you. I mean, I'd love to see Sting still around, and, you know, unfortunately, I have heard that he's had a couple of sloppy matches like that, and he's hurt a couple of people. You know, maybe it's a good thing to put him in a trio where he's not as likely to do that.
Yeah, this isn't the first incident. Talking about Sting, that isn't the first incident, and it wasn't the last one either. He hurt people prior to coming to WWE when he was I believe they start out at the Oklahoma wrestling professional.
No, they stopped doing Oklahoma.
Okay, so it's just NXT now, right, down in Florida?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Well, so
it's been Ohio Valley.
Ohio Valley, that's right. I'm sorry. Ohio Valley, that's right. They still have that.
That's
though, right?
That's where John Cena came up at. They stopped doing that.
Okay, so when he was in NXT before they went completely mainstream, and then he came to, what was it, Raw with the Shield, he had actually hurt a couple in training. They were just training, and he hurt them, and they were just learning a move. And I know, Marquis, that you can get hurt in training, but it's all on the person doing the move. Am I not right?
More than it's on both of y'all most of the time. I mean, taking the bump, you have to know how to take a bump properly. That's why I don't watch WWE's women division. They can't take a bump properly. Every time they take a bump, I think they're about to hurt themselves because their head falls back instead of them bracing with their hands down and falling with their head tucked into their chin like they're supposed to and trained to. They fall just straight back and the head hits the mat every time. That causes concussions. Trust me, I've been there. I know what it feels like. Right. All right. If you don't take that bump properly, you will hurt yourself. I swear up and down. But you know, what's funny is that, you know, with Seth Rollins is that he works too stiffly. You would think that, Brock Lesnar would work stiff. He doesn't. Brock Lesnar, he cradles everybody. He will throw you over his head as soft as possible to not injure you. Whereas Seth Rollins just goes out there and just does stuff, you know?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, go ahead, Jekyll.
Isn't that why they got rid of, you know, what was probably one of the best finishing moves that they ever had was getting rid of his curb stomp?
Yeah.
Because I'm sorry, that one looked so damaging. And, like, you could believe that somebody was out and done after that.
The curb stomp, the pile driver. The only pile driver you can do now is the tombstone. The only people that can do it is Kane and The Undertaker.
They also got rid of, if I'm not mistaken, they got rid of the full-on powerbomb after Nash quit wrestling too because so many people were hurting others, right?
Yeah, Sid Vicious broke someone's neck. I can't remember who it was.
D'Lo Brown when he put
That's right, it was D'Lo.
D'Lo Brown was the pile driver, was the pullover pile driver.
Powerbomb. No,
was it a powerbomb?
It was a botched powerbomb outside the ring. That's
what broke D'Lo Brown's neck. Yep.
Yeah, when Darren hit the ground, it broke his neck, and that was when he was. They had him running with LOD at the time.
I'm telling you, man. Hey, D'Lo Brown was a fantastic wrestler, man.
Oh man, he had talent, man.
He was another one that hurt a lot of people, though.
Yeah, remember, that's what I was talking about. He hurt somebody. I don't know if it was Stone Cold or somebody, but he broke somebody's neck doing a pullover pile driver.
Yeah.
You know, when you put him in the leg and you grab the tights and just sit down?
The pile driver was Owen Hart that broke his neck.
Owen Hart broke Steve's neck, yeah, because it paralyzed him. And what's his name?
He's
the ref. Earl Hebner went up to Steve because Steve wasn't responding at all because he was supposed to give a signal after the pile driver. When Earl went over there, Steve said, "I can't feel anything from my shoulders down," and his fingers were tingling, but he wanted to keep doing the match because Earl was about to stop the match. But yeah, it was Owen that screwed up his neck.
Because that was actually years later, that's what Steve said was the start of him being done with wrestling, was that injury and the re-aggravation of it over and over again.
The DDT. They don't really like that one anymore, too.
Yeah, I've noticed that. That used to be a good move.
Well, and a lot of that goes back to when we were talking offline about Chris Benoit. The head injuries that they were sustaining from those, especially because, I mean, even when it's done right, you know, there's still a risk that they're going to crack their skulls off of the mat every time they do that, no matter how good they are.
Yep.
So, Marquis, talking wrestling ringside right now, to hit on what Jekyll just said, I know that wrestling mats have come a long way since, you know, the 1970s and 80s, but there's still not that much there. It's mainly wood and just a little bit of carpet, right?
Yeah, if you go and look at the WWE match rings, they're kind of like a spring foam. They got springs on the bottom of them, and they have the plywood, but they have a lot of cushion too. If you go to like your, you know, mom and pop's flea market wrestling, it is literally those plywood, maybe one of those old like liners for a bed and carpet. That's
now,
it.
Yeah, I've seen some of those. I've seen some of those indie rings when they were putting them up or tearing them down, and it looked like you were sitting in a junkyard for 50 years and seeing some screwed up vehicle. I mean, it was so rusty, you know, the underpinning.
And see, with WWE, though, man, their rings are really, like, bouncy. It's like, you know, it's bouncy. It's just, that's the only word I got, it's bouncy, you know? But your mom and pops, I'm telling you, go to your local flea market and go to a wrestling event. Go to your local National Guard Armory and watch a wrestling event. You'll see those mats, they sound like you just hitting on the ground because that's how they feel. So you have been listening to Triple Threat Vets here on DVRadio.net, WDVR. And every show we'll be ending it with a finishing move. Yes, a finishing move. Every great wrestler has one, and you know probably one or two of these finishing moves, all right? And that will be our quick final thought at the end of every episode. And, you know, we're going to be alternating this. So this week, you got me, COA, Center of Attention, Marquis Davis. My final thought is this. We talked about stables. We talked about current wrestling. Okay. If you haven't watched an episode of WWE, try to get back into it. Check it out. Wrestling is still as great as it used to be. You might not know the names, but you still know the environment. Let's just say it like that. And this has been your finishing move here on Triple Threat Bets with me, Marquis Davis, the center of attention, Marquis Davis, Jekyll, and Boner Wood. Thank you for listening. Radio.